3-0 Blue Jays. The pitch ripped to deep right. Back is Ichiro. Back. He's at the wall. There it goes. A grand slam. Seven to nothing. Blue Jays, thanks to Edwin Encarnacion. Wow.
Wow, indeed. Edwin Encarnacion, a little perturbed about getting called out at third base when he tried to steal it in the sixth inning. He was clearly safe. Threw the helmet down, angrily walked off the field, almost turned back to give third base umpire Greg Gibson a piece of his mind, but thought better of it. The next pitch Edwin saw, he crushed to right center field for that grand slam with nobody out in the eighth inning to extend the Blue Jays' lead from 3-0 to 7-0 and put the exclamation point on this one as Carlos Villanueva followed with a hitless ninth after Darren Oliver pitched a 1-2-3 eighth after Jason Fraser pitched a one-hit shutout seventh inning, all in support of a brilliant Brandon Morrow. And the Blue Jays beat the Seattle Mariners by a score of 7-0. They snap a four-game losing streak. They move back up over 500. They have never been under 500 this season. And they close within 2.5 games of the Tampa Bay Rays for first place in the East to within a half game of the New York Yankees for third. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We are taking your phone calls. At 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. And I want to know which Brandon Morrow you like better. Going into this game, Morrow had a 3.71 ERA. He had a whip of 1.12, which is just outstanding. By going for more ground balls, he had three double plays turned behind him, but only 12 strikeouts in 16 and two-thirds innings. Tonight, this evening, as 4 o'clock games are weird, whatever you want to call it, he says, forget this, I'm not getting ground balls anymore. 9 strikeouts, no walks, but he only lasts 6 innings. Which Brandon Morrow do you like better? We start with Darcy in Dundas. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
How are you doing? I didn't follow the game too much today, so I'm not sure I can comment. And I guess... Whatever makes it work, you know. Like if he can strike batters out and get the win that way, good. You know, I don't know that I could comment on that. I had a question for you, which pertains to the bullpen, and it may be my misperception. I want some help here because I've been a little critical of the bullpen, specifically the guys who are supposed to wrap things up, you know, the setup and closer, and I don't know, even know if I can tell you who those guys are because I don't think we have a set person in that position. So can you help me by shedding a little light on, are we in need of somebody in that position? Do we need a lights-out closer? Are these guys, they got the potential, they're just struggling a bit? Where's that all at?
No, absolutely they don't need a closer. They have one. He just happens to be on the disabled list right now. And they have in Sergio Santos, a guy who is just emerging at the beginning of his career as a big league closer. He last year took over the job with the White Sox a month and a half or so into the season and racked up 30 saves. He struck out 92 in 63 and a third innings and only allowed 41 hits. The league hit something like a .181 off of him. He was outstanding, and just at the beginning of his career as a pitcher, only 28 years old. Right now, he is on the disabled list with a shoulder inflammation, so the Blue Jays hope to have him back by the middle of May. Until then, they've got Francisco Cordero, who is closing out games, and Cordero is second on the active saves list behind only Mariano Rivera in the game. So they've got a very, very good bullpen. It really hasn't shown itself to be very, very good to this point this season with the 5 blown saves over the course of the first 20 games, but that's going to happen. And certainly, even though they're on pace to blow 40 saves, they're not going to. This is a very, very, very good bullpen.
Okay, so the guy that's on, Santos, is that his name?
Santos.
Okay, and has he actually pitched in the, or did he run?
Yeah, where have you been, Darcy?
I've been in a cave, I think. I don't know.
I think so. got to pay a little bit of attention every once in a while.
I got to get out to a couple more games. That's the big problem there.
That's for sure, and you got to listen to more of them on the radio also.
Yeah, well, when I can. So how long has he been on the DL?
About a week, I think. I think last Friday he went on the DL with the shoulder inflammation after he didn't look so good in an outing in a game against the Orioles, I believe. I don't think he blew that save, but I don't think he pitched especially well. But he's got a couple of saves this year, should have three, has blown a couple of saves as well, but probably had to do with the shoulder problems.
Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate you helping me out a little bit.
All right, no problem. Thank you for the call. Yeah, it was against the Rays the last time Sergio Santos pitched, back on April 17th, and he gave up a single, got a double play ball. Oh, no, it wasn't. Pardon me. I'm lying. It was against the Royals, first game of the Royal Series. Yeah, so last Thursday, first game of the Royal Series, gave up a run on two hits but still managed to get the save, and after that was put on the DL with shoulder inflammation. We continue listening on 1290 CJBK in London. Ryan, you're on the Blue Jays Talk. Which Brandon Morrow do you like better?
Hey, Mike, I'm all for the efficiency of the ground ball Morrow, but to tell you the truth, coming off a four-game loss, I love the six innings, nine strikeouts. Talk about a morale boost. And with that bullpen behind him, Darren Oliver, how you doing? 74-mile-an-hour off-speed pitch to end the inning. Very nicely done. I definitely, definitely like what he did tonight. Took the bull by the horns and let it rip.
Yeah, you know what? I'm with you. I do prefer the more efficient, get deeper, get ground balls, double plays, get you out of trouble. But an outing like this is a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Would have loved to have been at the game. He was just did what he had to do. Love it.
All right. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate the call. 7-0 Blue Jay win over the Seattle Mariners. Brandon Morrow eschewing his ground ball self of the first four starts of the season. Throws six innings of five-hit shutout. It's the first time in his career that he has gone at least six innings in a game and not walked anybody. 44th time he has taken it at least six innings. And he struck out nine. It is the Blue Jays Talk. Lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590. We go to Dean in Richmond Hill, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Dean, which Brandon Morrow do you like better?
I got to tell you, Mike, I like this Brandon Morrow. And what a bounce back statement, right? Basically, I think everybody needs to calm down. I think that this is the best, worst start we've ever had, considering that the offense is stagnant and we're still at 500.
It's a very good way to put it. Best, worst start the Blue Jays have ever had.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's getting, you know, a couple of 162 games. We're a few games in, and the panic buttons are being hit. But Bautista starts to wake up just slightly. We're talking a different position. We're in first place. Everybody's happy. We're all going home. Right?
Not unfair at all.
So I just think that this Brandon Morrow is the best. It's a bounce back statement. It's what we need from a number two guy or number one guy, whichever one he wants to jockey for. And I just think we're in a poised position to make the playoffs. It might be early, but it's a bold prediction.
All right.
You heard it here.
Okay. Thank you, Dean. Appreciate it. I don't know if they're in a good position to make the playoffs. And like I said, even while they were winning every day in spring training, I think that you can't really favor this team to be in the playoffs. You can't expect them to be in the playoffs. But if things do break right, I think they will be. And part of that is Brandon Morrow and Henderson Alvarez and Kyle Drabek, all of whom have pitched so well to this point this season, and a great job by Morrow today. And amazingly, the last 16 hitters who've come to the plate against Brandon Morrow with a runner in scoring position have been retired. 0-16. And the only one of those 16 that's even managed to move a runner was Miguel Olivo, and he popped up, and his pop-up was dropped by Kelly Johnson, and that's how he moved that runner. Brandon Morrow has been an absolute shutdown guy with runners in scoring position over his last two starts. It has been incredible. and very different Brandon Morrows over the last two starts. Jay and Barry, listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590 The Fan, which Morrow do you like better?
I like today's Morrow. How can you argue with that? I'll tell you why, and if I'll have time to make a Cordero comment, and you'll see what you have to say about it. I much prefer Casey Jansen, Jason Fraser, Luis Perez in the 6-7-8, or half of one of those innings, fresh and strong, than a possibly fatigued Brandon Morrow, who has been known when he gets tired to throw that 92-mile-an-hour fastball straight through the heart of the plate and give up home runs. So that's the answer about that. But what scares me isn't the middle relief, who I think have been fantastic. It's Cordero. And that guy may be second to Rivera Acton, but he is old. And every time I see him warm up, I get nervous. He has failed to come in ever and pitch a smooth inning. He's putting men on base. He's walking guys. He's always out of trouble. And I think him and, honestly, Perez or somebody else should be switching roles because he makes me nervous. I want to know what you think about that.
Well, Perez gave up a grand slam yesterday, so I'm not sure why that wouldn't make you nervous. Cordero...
First time, though. He's pitching great all year. You have to admit. That was a good one.
Oh, I don't know. He's pitched great all year. Cordero's been fine. Cordero, I kind of understand where you're coming from, but really hasn't been nearly as bad as you think. I'm looking back at his outings, and there's got to be a 1-2-3 inning in there somewhere.
I think he's got a high whip.
I haven't seen one yet.
Putting men on base and
yeah, but look at an outing like yesterday. He comes in with a 2-run lead, gives up a home run. I will grant you that.
Thank you.
But then, after he gives up the home run, he gets a pop up, and he gets a weak ground ball to get out of the inning. The error happens.
Yep.
Not his fault. Gets the intentional walk, and then a line drive, a sinking liner to center that falls in for the game-tying single. You know, you look back at a few of the outings, and how many have been really hair-raising? There was one where he walked the leadoff guy, but then he got the next three guys in a row. It hasn't been as much of a tightrope as you think. There was one in Kansas City, gives up a leadoff single, but then gets a double play ball, and pops up the next guy. It hasn't been perfect by any means, and it hasn't been pretty, but he's gotten the job done far, far, far more often than he hasn't. And I'm not saying that he should imbue you with this phenomenal confidence that he's going to take everybody down immediately, no problem. But this is a guy who had a really, really, really good year last year, the best year he's had in a long time. And we've seen that he can get ground balls. We got Brian Peña to ground into double plays in consecutive games in big spots in Kansas City. And we've seen that he can dial it up to 96 and blow people away with a fastball if he needs to.
Well, we'll see what happens. He still makes me nervous. And I know he should have gotten the out of the game with the Lowry error. But you know what? Sometimes you need a guy like that to get you four outs in an inning. And he didn't do it. And when they're down by one run or two runs and he puts a man on first immediately, automatically the tying or winning run is at the plate or on deck. And wouldn't it be nice to go three up, three down just once?
Sure it would. But how many closers do that on a regular basis?
Not many. But
not
so far
many.
He hasn't. We'll see how it goes with the season, and maybe I'll be wrong, but I have a feeling he's going to be a mini Kevin Gregg here, but I hope not.
But you know what? If he is, and so far he hasn't been even close to that, but if he is, then you move him out of that spot and you give it to Casey Jansen, or you give it to Jason Fraser, or you give it to Darren Oliver. And that's the beauty of the depth that this bullpen has.
I hope so. There's this Neanderthalistic attitude that the managers have about age and salaries, and this is the eighth inning closing or setup man. And sometimes you got to say, you know what, he was supposed to be, but you know, Perez or Fraser or Jansen are outperforming him. But hey, look, we'll see what happens. It's a young season, but he's scaring me a little bit these days, and I hope he turns it around.
All right, thank you for the call, and I understand you need something to gripe about. I do. But it hasn't been as bad as you think with Francisco Cordero. And if it gets to the point that it is, that it's costing them games on a regular basis, he'll be out. Plain and simple. So far, one blown save for Francisco Cordero this season. And pretty much every time he's pitched in a save situation. Keith is in Scarborough. Which Brandon Morrow you like better, this one or the one who gets the ground balls and goes deeper in games?
I like the fireballer myself, Mike.
It's definitely more fun to watch the fireballer, it's true.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think, too, it puts something else in the hitter's mind. If they know, you know, that they got a, that this guy's a strikeout pitcher as well as he can induce the ground ball to pop up the fly or whatever it may be, I think it's just another tool in Morrow's toolbox that he can use and that the other hitters have to be aware of.
I think that's a very fair point. And you know what? The more you have in your repertoire, the harder you are to read, the harder you are to fall, the less likely it is that you're going to fall into a pattern, and the tougher it is for a guy to think he knows what's coming.
Yeah, and I think because the Jays won today, I'm going to predict there's going to be three more wins in a row, because if you follow the pattern, you're due for a four-game winning streak again.
You're absolutely right, Keith. I already beat you to that, but thank you. I
no
think
way.
So, too. I appreciate the call. The Blue Jays are starting a four-game win streak right now. That's just the way it works. And that will include a win over Yu Darvish and the Texas Rangers on Monday night. Thanks for all the calls. We will get to the rest of you as we bring it into our local station. And those of you listening across the country, tune in, sportsnet590.ca, to listen to the Blue Jays talk the rest of the way when we leave you at the bottom of the hour. Right now, we're going to head downstairs and listen to the skipper. What did John Farrell have to say about this game?
I thought Brandon came out and set the tone for us today. He was powerful. He threw a lot of strikes. And once again, like in Kansas City in his previous outing, he made a number of big pitches to get a strikeout with men in scoring position less than two outs. And kept the game under control, kept it in check until obviously he had his big blow in the eighth inning in a grand slam. But good to see Jose hit a couple balls hard today. Lindy, so hopefully it's a sign that, you know, the middle of the order is starting to come to life a little bit more. But you can't say enough about what Edwin has done really all through spring training and really in through the first 20-plus games this season. You know, he's done a good job as far as controlling the strike zone. He hasn't expanded all that much and hasn't chased out of the strike zone. And you look at the swing that he's using right now, and this was evident in the first day of spring training. It's a two-handed swing. You don't see the top hand release like he did a year ago. And it's enabled him to be that much more compact and keep his front shoulder online. And like I said, it's a much shorter swing. He's seeing the ball well, and he's swinging the bat with a lot of confidence.
John, did Brandon kind of revert to more of a power pitcher today than he had been in his previous starts? He seemed, but he dropped in a couple of really good curveballs here and there too. But
he pitched, used all four of his pitches, and as we've seen the last two outings, the late action to a slider particularly and the power to his fastball has increased. That's not uncommon for a power pitcher. You're going to see them 4 weeks into the season really start to hit stride, and I think that's what's taking place with Brandon.
John, to stay on Brandon, season high 9 strikeouts while walking nobody. Was this the kind of starts you were envisioning from him coming into the season?
Yeah, I think we felt like that there's the potential for another step forward in his progression. He has this capability every time he walks to the mound. So when you combine a well above average fastball with the command that he showed today, in addition to three other off-speed pitches, he's got the ability to not only take over the game but dominate the opposition. And again, we talked about it before the game. When the strikeouts come, the foul balls are going to get there. The pitch count might run up a little bit. That was the case again today, but still, we'll take six shutout innings every time he walks to the mound.
So will we, as we've heard from all you callers on the Blue Jays talk. Brandon Morrow, outstanding with six shutout innings, no walks, 9 strikeouts, and each of the last 16 times an opposition hitter has come to the plate with a runner in scoring position, Morrow has retired him. He gets his second win of the year. Blue Jays top the Seattle Mariners 7-0 to snap their 4-game losing streak. We'll take a look at what else is going on around the big leagues when the Honda postgame continues on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Rogers Center, the kids are running the bases. Everybody's happy because the Blue Jays pounded the Seattle Mariners 7-0. Adam Lind with a big RBI double in a three-run third. And Edwin Encarnacion with icing on the cake, a grand slam with nobody out in the eighth inning. Encarnacion, by the way, and we'll talk about this on the other side, on pace now for 147 RBIs this season with 19 in the first 21 games. A quick look at the scoreboard. The Detroit Tigers took a 7-2 lead into the bottom of the ninth against the Yankees, and Jose Valverde tried to pitch himself into a save situation. The Tigers beat the Yankees 7-5. Drew Smyly, six innings of two-hitter, to pick up his first major league win. Angels over the Indians 2-1. Scott Downs picks up his first save of the season. Oakland-Baltimore just underway, 0-0 in the top of the first. National League, Cincinnati downs Houston 6-0. Jay Bruce with a two-run double and a two-run homer. Cardinals took down Milwaukee 7-3. Kyle Loesch is 4-0. Cubs lead the Pirates 1-0 in the bottom of the second. Pirates over the Braves 1-0 in the bottom of the first. Diamondbacks on top of the Marlins 2-0 in the bottom of the first. This series continues tomorrow afternoon, the rubber game. The Blue Jays will throw Henderson Alvarez at the Mariners, and lefty Jason Vargas. We're on the air at 12:30 Eastern for a 107 first pitch. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. The accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Derek Brandale, Gord Brunt, I'm Mike Wilner. Stick with us in Toronto. Everybody else, good night from Rogers.
Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
And the pitch to Lind. Hit in the air, slicing down the left field line. Down in the corner, long run Figgins. He won't get there as it lands fair and kicks up and over the wall. It's a ground rule double. Scoring from second base is Kelly Johnson, and the Blue Jays take a 2-0 lead. RBI double for Adam Lind.
Adam Lind 2-for-3 with a walk, scored a run, drove one in. It's going to start. It started last time out, a couple of days ago, with his 1-for-3 with a walk. Adam Lind is coming around. Jose Bautista might be too with a ground rule double to right field. The ball he stayed on and took the other way. In the eighth inning, ahead of Edwin Encarnacion's grand slam. Encarnacion, 2-for-3, double the slam, sacrifice fly, now has 19 runs batted in on the season in just 21 games for the Blue Jays. That's 147 RBI pace. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open, but not too many, at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. And I'm switching the question on you. When we were talking to the whole country, I wanted to know which Brandon Morrow you liked better. Now, the question is, Edwin Encarnacion, how do you like him now? Last year, I fielded a ton of calls on this very program saying, yeah, Edwin's okay, but he can't drive in runs. How can you make this guy a DH? He doesn't have enough RBIs. He can't drive in runs, as though that was something, A, that he could control, and two, that's an actual thing, a repeatable skill. Edwin had 55 RBIs last year, despite 36 doubles and 17 home runs. This year, 19 ribbies in 21 games, on pace to drive in 147. How do you like him now? Bob in Toronto, you're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How do you like Edwin Encarnacion?
I love his swing this year.
This
Much
year,
better.
I like that. That's interesting. Is it different from last year's?
It sure looks like it.
Really? I don't see a difference.
No.
No, not at all.
He's keeping both hands on the bat.
I think he did that pretty regularly last season.
Well, okay, you're the expert. But I wanted to ask you a question about last night's game.
Sure, why not?
When JP got on in the seventh,
yes.
If you're going to bunt him over, why would you not have a pinch runner in?
I don't think the intent was to bunt him over. I think Yunel Escobar did that on his own, and we've seen him do that a lot on his own in the past, which may be one of the reasons that he's not hitting second in the Blue Jays lineup. But why? As for why there wasn't a pinch runner, John Farrell thought it was too early. He thinks that in the seventh inning, it's too early to take out a bat for a runner because that bat could very well come up again in a big spot on the bottom of the ninth inning.
Okay. So he probably wasn't ordered to bunt.
I don't think so, no.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
All I wanted to know.
All right, thank you for the call, Bob. I don't think so. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure Yunel Escobar bunted on his own in the seventh inning. Last night, the Blue Jays lost. But tonight, this evening, this late afternoon, whatever, they won 7-0. Tony is in London listening on CJBK 1290. Welcome to the program, Tony. How do you like Edwin now?
Well, he was the difference of not making it a nervous ninth with the grand slam, so we didn't have to worry about the bullpen. And I thought it was a good deal bringing him back last year. It couldn't hurt, and he's proven that he's our DH now. But what I want to talk about, Mike, is a comment made about Ichiro Suzuki, both last night and today. And he's had a Hall of Fame career here in the major leagues. But by suggesting you merge his numbers from the Japanese League and the major leagues and put him, rank him where it was, I think, fourth all time, I don't think he can do that. I mean, it isn't fair to use those numbers. For instance, there have been a number of ex-major leaguers have gone to the Japanese leagues and had good years over there, and you wouldn't consider their numbers compiled there added to their major league numbers that they did accomplish. So I like to set that record straight. I'm somewhat disappointed in Jerry making that, using that as a gauge in the performance of Suzuki. He's already proven he's a major, he's a Hall of Famer eventually. But with the past records, I mean, you look at the position players that have come from that league, aside from the Suzuki and Hideki Matsui, no one else has really performed to any kind of all-star level.
No, well, every once in a while, yeah, but no one on a real legitimate long-term basis. I mean, Hideo Nomo was, Kasasaki, you're talking about the position players, and you're right, there haven't been many. And I agree with you, Tony. I'm sorry that you're disappointed in Jerry. I mean, he's entitled to see things the way that he wants to see things. But the way I see things as well is it's not an equivalent league. Japanese major leagues are not equivalent to the major leagues. You've seen guys who have failed miserably on this side of the ocean go over there and be fantastic, like Tuffy Rhodes and Kevin Bass and guys like that who are legends in Japan who were marginal at best in the major leagues. I'm like you. I mean, you don't count a guy's hits in AAA and add them to his hits in the major leagues. I don't think you can add a guy's hits in Japan to his hits in the major leagues, but I don't think that's what Jerry's saying. I don't think he's saying that they're equivalent. I think what he's just doing is bringing up this guy had a long and really successful career in Japan, and it's important to note how many hits he got and how much of a legend he was over there in adding to how much of a legend he has become over here. Because usually when, you know, guys don't come over after they've been in another place forever, and guys don't usually spend, say, 4, 5, 6 years in AAA and then come up to the major leagues and be an all-star for 10 years. So it's just kind of an interesting thing to note, but I don't think he's equating the two.
I know that Jerry should have been familiar with a player that one of the earliest players from Japan to come to the major leagues was, if my memory serves me correctly, was in the mid-60s, early 60s, a reliever named Murakami.
That's right, and Musunori Murakami with the Giants.
Yeah, with the San Francisco Giants, like I say, Jerry should...
talks about him all the time.
But he was the first, and then there was a long drought until Hideo Nomo,
yep.
I think.
Because and of the posting system and the way things work over there. Tony, thank you for the call. I agree with you. You can't count numbers in the Japanese league the same as you count them in the major leagues. They're not equivalent leagues. Rob is in Toronto. Hey. Rob, you're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How do you like Edwin now?
He's great. You know what? I you know what? These guys that say, oh, yeah, he wasn't a good hitter like last year. Not that I'm saying negative, because I think that that Grand Slam was and the hard hit and stuff. I'm listening on the radio because I'm working, and I'm trying to follow the Blue Jays again. I got away from the Blue Jays for a while. Sorry to tell you that. And,
well, we're glad you're back.
And you know what? And I was a big fan in the World Series years, and with Olimar and all those guys, and you know, it was tremendous and stuff like that. And then I got back into the days of Carl Delgado and all that. And then I got to stay in on it. I got to, you know, and this year I'm following it more because I see the Blue Jays, you know, not counting last night, so what? That's going to happen. You know what I mean? I'm staying positive, and I'm hoping that the Blue Jays make the playoffs. But even if they don't, I'm not saying that they're not going to, but I'm going to keep myself ready because they are a good team. I like the hitting. I like Bautista's coming around. I think he's hitting harder now than he had a little bit. And they're, you know what? You've been in the business a long time, and you know more than I know. But you see that sometimes, you know what? You're going to have droughts. Nothing's perfect.
Well, baseball's all about droughts.
That's right. And you're going to have your ups and downs. It's a patient game, you know. Yep. It's not, it's a, you know, and you know what? But it's exciting. And you know what? I'm glad that the fans are out there more, and I'm going to get to more games this year, and I'm going to root them on. And I think Adam Lynn, he did great today. I think he was a great player today. And also even Brent Laurie, you know. And look at Brett Morrow.
Brandon Morrow, yeah, he had a terrific game
Brandon
today.
Morrow.
Rob, it's great. You know what? I think there are a lot of people like you who have come back to the Blue Jays this year, and I think that's terrific. We're happy to have you, and I'm glad that you're going to come out to more games and check them out and that you're enjoying this, and you have exactly the right attitude about this, which is unlike a lot of the people who've come back to the Blue Jays this year. But we'll take them all. Thank you for the call. We'll take more on the other side. An update is coming your way. And then more Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Pitches hit high in the air down the left field side. Should be deep enough. Figgins is there at the line. Makes the catch in fair territory. Bautista tags. Here comes the throw. Cut off. Bautista will score. They have Lynn in a rundown between second and third. And the tag applied as Lynn is out.
That was the first of five RBIs for Edwin Encarnacion, that sack fly into the double play to end the three-run third inning. And, you know, I'm hoping, and I think maybe Adam Lind kind of strayed a little bit too far off second base because he saw how good that throw from Sean Figgins was, and they might have had a shot at Jose Bautista at the plate. But by going, he gets into the rundown, allows the run to score, and it was 3-0 Blue Jays. It stayed that way till the bottom of the eighth when Encarnacion came up huge again with a grand slam for a 5-RBI day. And the Jays beat the Mariners 7-0 behind a tremendous pitching performance from Brandon Morrow. 6 shutout innings, no walks, 5 hits, 9 strikeouts. The Mariners 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position against Morrow in this game. And Morrow has retired each of the last 16 hitters who have come to the plate against him with a runner in scoring position. A bit of a spotlight on Edwin, though, tonight. And the question we're asking right now on the Blue Jays Talk is, how do you like him now? Last year, a lot of criticism for Encarnacion, who hit 36 doubles and 17 homers and hit close to .280, but only drove in 55 runs. This year, he has 19 RBIs in 21 games. That is a pace for 147 RBIs, which I believe, and I'm looking up right now, would tie the Blue Jays' all-time record for RBIs in a single season. I'm going to check on that as we take a call from John in Toronto. John, how you like Edwin now?
I've always liked him, but if you think he's going to get 150 RBIs, I don't think he is. But
I don't think he is either. But you never know. If Adam Lind and Jose Bautista can get on base as they have in the past, he's going to have a lot of opportunities.
I'm hoping he gets those chances, which he didn't have last year, which is why he didn't hit as well. The other thing is, though, you know, he's cheap. He's a good money ball player. I mean, he makes $3.5 million. He's playing really well. If he didn't hit a grand slam today, he'd be on pace for still a great season. He hit almost 20 home runs in limited time last year. I think he's a really good player for the Jays. He can back up first, third. You know, I mean, not play them well, but he can play them. He's not bad. I mean, and he doesn't mind DHing. I think for what he is, he's exactly what the team needs at this precise moment. I don't know. Yes.
Well,
I agree with all the other callers. It's a great team.
Yeah, I don't even know if that matters in the overall. I mean, it's wonderful that he's so cheap. It's true. That's not really what Moneyball means. But for anybody right now, the way he's gotten to the start he's gotten off to this season, the way he's hitting, he'd be a great fit for anybody. No matter where you go and who you are.
He's playing well, and I'm glad he is, because the other guys that are ahead of him are not playing that well. So.
No, you're right. He has been, as much as Eric Thames is leading this team in batting average, and I don't think he's leading it in OPS, but it's up there. Edwin has been the Blue Jays' most consistent hitter.
Yeah, and that's
consistently
fantastic.
Good hitter from start to finish, from start to game 21 so far this year. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Want to get a few more people in. 147 RBIs would be a club record. Carlos Delgado's team record is 145, set back in 2003 when he should have won the MVP. Rob is in Aurora and on the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Rob, how do you like Edwin now?
Oh, I love Edwin, and I agree with you. I liked him last year. I just think he got ripped off in terms of guys getting on in front of him. And he'll be good. I think he'll do well over 100 RBI. But, there were some strange plays in that game. We were down at the stadium today, and do you think Adam Lind did that on purpose to draw the throw?
I think he may well have.
Yeah, I know he's a heady ball player. A lot of those guys who play first base are heady ball players. But that one, you either thought to yourself he had a brain cramp or he was brilliant. I don't know which is true.
It's definitely one or the other.
Yeah.
I'll ask him tomorrow.
The strange one was Johnson, who is the most sure-handed guy we've had at second in a number of years, dropping that pop line.
Aaron Hill was a pretty good second baseman.
Johnson is just so professional, so sort of dependable, predictable, and then ball pops out of his glove, and you just shake your head and go, "How did that happen?"
Yeah, that was really weird, and it was probably because he stepped on Adam Lind's foot. As Lind was trying to get out of the way, I really don't know why Kelly Johnson called him off. I mean, Adam Lind was completely camped under that pop fly. He had it all the way. It is the middle infielder's prerogative to call the ball if he wants it. But I think given the opportunity to do that again, Kelly Johnson would probably just let Adam Lind take that pop up.
The other couple of strange calls were, I think the scorer must have been, is he a homer or is he the opposite? Because that should have been a hit, the one he hammered to third base, don't you think?
Should have been a double play, I think.
You think that was a playable ball?
Absolutely. It went right through the third baseman's legs.
It looked like it live. I didn't see the replay, but it looked like he just hammered it so hard.
Oh, he did. He did, but you're still supposed to catch that if you're in the big leagues. And there's no question it was a rocket.
And I've called and mentioned this to you before. It drives me crazy. They won't show replays on close plays because of the umpires union, but that play at third base, that guy was so safe. Edwin was so safe, his elbows were across the bag when he got tagged.
You are absolutely 100% correct. And I think that's the argument that John Farrell was making to Greg Gibson when he came out to argue. And I think I saw him say it's not possible for him to have been out with that slide where the tag was. It's not possible. And that was a terrible call. Second straight day Greg Gibson's made a bad call that's cost the Blue Jays.
You know, and you have to wonder if some of these guys, I know it's going to sound like a conspiracy theory, but the strike in 94, when they go on strike, a lot of my friends seem to think that's an anti-Canadian situation. They didn't want another Canadian-based team to win the World Series. And you see calls like that at third base, you wonder if Gibson isn't one of these homeboys that doesn't like to see Canadian teams do well.
That thought never occurred to me, and I don't think that it would ever occur to any anyone without an unbelievable bias. I think there's nothing, an umpire's bad call against the Blue Jays, I'm sure, has nothing to do with the fact that they play in Canada. I appreciate the call. Good tinfoil hat way to finish it up, though. Let's go to Susan in Woodbridge. Susan, what do you think of Edwin now?
Well, he's getting me a lot of points for my fantasy team, so I'm extremely happy.
Nice.
Nice. I just have a question. If the Seattle Mariners came in the same year as the Blue Jays,
yes.
I noticed they have an anniversary crest celebrating their 35th on the arm, and I was just wondering why we don't.
Do you think the 35th anniversary is especially significant?
I think you should celebrate anything that just marks time.
Well, how often do you do it? Every 5 years you're going to put a patch on?
10 years, whatever.
Every 2 years?
No, I don't think they have to be that celebratory, but I think overall it would mean that, you know, it gives you, I think, a little more credibility. I mean, I didn't even realize until I saw their crest. They did come in the same year as ours.
Yes, they did.
So,
it never occurred to me that they should have a patch because I don't think a 35-year anniversary means anything.
Well, it means something to Seattle.
Well, they don't have anything else to celebrate, though. I mean, the Blue Jays have a couple of World Series championships in their back pockets.
Good point. But still, it does mark time.
Yeah, but, I mean, 25, 10, 50, those are the big ones, right? The passage of time is the passage of time. I don't think it lends a franchise any more credibility that they've been around 35 years.
Not at all. It just seemed odd that the two expansion teams that came in at the same time wouldn't be doing, like, the same type of, marking of the, anniversary.
Maybe. I'll give you that. But I have to say, until Seattle's, I mean, I knew this was the 35th year. The Blue Jays came in 1977, even though this is their 36th season.
Right.
It never for a second did I think, boy, you know what, the Blue Jays should commemorate their 35th anniversary with some sort of a patch.
Well, something to think about.
It would have been better to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the first World Series, which is this year.
Exactly. Well, we're up for anything. Anything that's going to get bums in the seats, I think it's great.
Okay, but I don't know that would do that either. I mean,
you never know.
It's a whole other societal argument. Why do we feel like we have to celebrate everything and even the most minor things, you know, you celebrate that, hey, they're still around after 35 years when is there anybody who didn't expect them to be? It's like getting a participation ribbon.
But I also think, unfortunately, and you know from your callers, it's all about the end, the win. It's not about the journey. And
that's
as
for
season
sure.
Ticket holders since 77, our family has had season ticket holders.
Excellent.
And ticket holders. So, you know, we've been there in the droughts and the horrible times and, you know, times when you just said, I'll never come back, and then you do. And so I realized, you know, you have to celebrate the journey.
Yeah, I agree with you, and thank you for the call. But I don't think you have to celebrate it with a patch commemorating your 35th anniversary, especially since you're in your 36th season. The Blue Jays had their 10-year anniversary patch. I remember that back in 1986, which was their 10th season. If you're going to do a 35, should have been last year. So not only are the Mariners celebrating nothing more than the passage of time, they're also doing it incorrectly. Mike is in Kitchener listening on 570 News. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk. Mike, how do you like Edwin now?
Loving him, Mike. Thank you for asking. And like Susan said, I've also got him in my fantasy league. So it helps when I'm up against my dad this week.
Nice.
I think it's a good thing that he's getting a chance to DH mostly because, to me, that allows him to focus on his hitting. His defense is consistently poor.
That's not true.
Well, if he's at .89, you know, at third base last year, I mean,
last year he had two awful, awful, awful weeks at third base, and the rest of the season he was just fine. He had one terrible game at first base. The rest of the year he was just fine. His defense is not consistently poor.
It's definitely not top echelon.
Oh, no, it's definitely not top echelon. You're right.
But what I'm saying is I think it just gives him a chance to focus on the hitting to really produce, and because I think that he gets out there in the field, maybe embarrasses himself a little bit with some of these poor plays, and then allows him to just focus on getting runs in. And also, he's got a lot of hitters with pop hitting around him, too. So he's going to see a lot of pitches to hit, and there's going to be a lot of guys on base. So it's just it's a perfect storm of the right things for Edwin to be producing.
You know, the best thing that the Blue Jays did for Edwin Encarnacion last year was take him off the field, was tell him that he doesn't have to worry about playing third base anymore, because you're right. The fact that I think he so thoroughly embarrassed himself at third the first week of the season, I think he made 8 errors in the first 7 games that he played at third base last year. I think that really, really affected him over the course of the first 2-3 months of the season. And he didn't get out of it that funk until they said, you know what, forget it. Jose Bautista is going to play third until Brett Laurie comes up. You don't have to worry about it anymore. And from that point on, he's actually been quite good defensively, with the exception of the other day when he made an error on the first ball that was hit to him in Kansas City. And he has been a terrific, terrific hitter. So, yeah, you're right on a lot of counts there, Mike. And hopefully it will continue this season. And, you know, he's only 28 years old. He's got a lot of time ahead of him.
Yep. He sure does. And, Mike, can I ask a second question? How long along the lines do you think Anthony Gosa is to being called up?
Oh, he's a ways away, I think. I mean, we might see him as a September call-up this year, especially if the Jays are in a race, because he's a guy who's an elite-level defender and base runner, and you can always use those extra weapons. I mean, you know how often people are calling up talking about, well, they should have used Rajay here instead of there, and you'd have two of them if Gosa was here. So I'd be surprised if the Jays are in a competitive spot late in the season, and I think they will be. I'd be surprised if you didn't see Gosa as a September call-up. But as far as being a regular starter and a contributor all the time, he's still got a lot of things he's got to work on. He's striking out way too much. He's not walking enough. He's got to get that bat to come around before he's ready to be a regular in the big leagues.
All right. Thanks for taking the call, Mike.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate the call. 7-0 Blue Jays beat the Mariners. Likely to start another 4-game win streak, because it's just the way the season's been. Win 2, lose 2. Win 2, lose 2. Win 2, lose 2. Win 4, lose 4. And now they're off to the start of the next win 4. Cameron is in Toronto on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How do you like Edwin now, Cameron?
You know what? I do like him. I like his bat. And you know what? He's one of the most consistent hitters right now for us. So he's got a lot of positives going. Yeah, his defense isn't always the greatest, but you know what? He makes up for it right now by focusing, like you said, having him DH and having him focus on his just hitting and hitting the ball. Like, he's tearing the cover off the ball when he hits it. Like, yesterday's home run, that was huge. And one thing I want to talk to you about, Mike, is I'm really, like, me and my wife were at the game today. We were we had a great time, got some sausages on the street afterwards, and we're just hearing some of the fans talk about, hey, you know, the Jays got swept by Baltimore, and now they lost yesterday, and they win today. Like, you know what? People need to relax and take the pressure off of them, because, you know what? They're going to come around. They're going to be a good, consistent team. And just hearing the fans in the city just talk about, like, you know, we need to win now. But you know what? No, we don't. They're going to be good. They're going to contend, but you know what? It's a slow process. It's a long season.
And you would think, too, that, and I know a lot of people got really excited by spring training, and it's amazing, because everybody going into spring training, the word from the fans was, well, they didn't get Darvish, they didn't get Fielder, they're going to finish in fourth again, and they're going to be terrible. And then they go out and they have that great spring training, and everybody thinks, well, they're going to win the World Series, and it's a guarantee that they'll make the playoffs, and that swing so quick, and then they lose 4 in a row, and now it's, oh, they're terrible, and they're going to finish in fourth place again. And those swings are so huge, and it's true. Like you said, it's a process. It takes time. There's a ton of talent here, a ton. And when it all comes together, this is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And,
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, and throughout the season, they've made those steps towards that.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say is, like, last night we were watching the game and Casey Jansen came in, and I was joking with my wife saying, uh-oh, they shouldn't put Casey Jansen in because he gives up too much home runs, because I thought that guy on Thursday night was hilarious.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? We're going to get those. It's going to happen. I appreciate the call, Cameron. We're out of time. As people come back to the Blue Jays, they're not really going to come back having paid a lot of attention for a while or really knowing much, and that's okay. I'm here to educate as we entertain, as we talk Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays most certainly were entertaining today, beating the Seattle Mariners 7-0. Back at it tomorrow, 12:30 for a 107 first pitch. Henderson Alvarez against Jason Vargas. Thanks to Tom Young, to Derek Brandeo, to Gord Brunt, for all of you who called. We will see you tomorrow.